Good evening. You guys are so beautiful. And thank you so much for inviting me. The practice talk, I think, is the title, to do a practice talk. And I just, does anyone have anything that I could take for my nerves? Because I'm, it's like the rattling of the bones. And I feel that the rattling of the bones is what stirs up the marrow and presents itself to us. But before I start to share a little bit, I want to do a little bit of thanking of all the ancestors of old. My blood ancestors, I can't read my own writing here. My Soto Zen lineage ancestors, my siblings, I'm one of nine. And half of them are gone, and the other half are still here. So my siblings become my ancestors, and they socialized me early in life. It was like nine of us, and we were between 1944 and 1956. My mother had nine kids, so we were kind of close together. And that was interesting. I want to offer a special thanks to Jim because he helped me with the gymnastics. Of my robes. I mean, I was like, what am I supposed to be doing with all of this material? And how do I get it on? And how do I take it off? And it's such a teaching to have to navigate, like just going to the bathroom. Because, you know, if you're a newbie, it takes like 3 minutes to get out of all of this stuff. So, the sanghas that have allowed me since 2015, I believe. So this is my 10th anniversary of being in practice, and I've been with Tassajara, the San Francisco Zen Center, Green Gulch. You know, just kind of sitting and sleeping, and also Sacramento Valley Stream. And I realized that a lot of what I've been doing for a decade is like sleeping and not paying attention. Not that I'm supposed to be paying attention, but there was a time when I felt like, oh, if I had been paying attention what the doshi does, then when I was asked to be doshi, I just finished up a 30-day, Terry and I, thank you, Terry, for being here. We spent 30 days at Tassajara for a 30-day practice period, not knowing the schedule, not knowing, you know, I thought I was going to, like, rest and meditate and eat orioki. It's like this grueling schedule. From 4:30 in the morning until roughly 9 at night. And if you have a teacher like Zinju, Earthland Manual, is like you get up at 3:30 to just get prepared for the day. And because I wasn't so familiar with my robes, I kind of bypassed a lot of taking naps. Because if it takes me 3 minutes to take my robes off and 3 minutes to put them on, and then it's a 15-minute, you know. So I just, you know, I suffered that one. And I want to thank my root teacher, Zinju, Earthland Manual. She's a strong teacher, an amazing bodhisattva, and she just laughed at me when I Zoomed with her, and I said, oh. I fell on my face. I totally messed up doshi. And she's just like, good for you. good for you. So thank you, everybody. So spending 30-day practice period at Tassajara at August, having a beautiful ceremony. And on 2019, I took my first set of vows with Jukai. And I had no idea the amazing experience of what taking vows or just sewing a rakusu, the stitching and the chanting, and how that I had no idea what would happen, like the stirring up of this aged, old suturing, this age-old holding all of my cloaks and all of my lies and all of my, you know, it's like everything just came to the forefront. And I guess if I had a wish, I would have wanted to take a peek at what that was, but there are no peaks that you can take. You gotta saddle up. You have to saddle up and go for the ride. And the more you get bucked off the horse, the more I got bucked off the horse, the more I fell on my face, I have like scar tissue on my nose, the stronger, I just felt I was. An example was they asked me to do, asked me very nicely, would you like to do doshi? And I was like, what's a doshi? I'm saying that to myself. And they have, Tassajara have a manual with all the jobs, but they didn't have anything on doshi. I'm very visual and very tactile, and I was like, so I got a little training, and I got to offer incense three times as part of being doshi. The first time, oh boy, it was just nerve-wracking. But I made my way up to the altar, and I stood before the stone Buddha, and I bowed, and I offered the incense. But while I was there, this amazing thing happened. It was as if I felt the presence of everyone who had ever stood at that altar and made and bowed, and my knees stopped shaking. Then I backed up and I bowed, and my knees got shaking again. So, okay. The second time, I totally fell on my face. It was like, I think between walking in, bowing, going up to the mat, stepping back, making a left step, I think I went from the shashu bow to the gachu bow. And it seems like the whole room just got quiet. I didn't even bow to the Buddha. I bypassed the Buddha. And you can kind of tell because you have all of these amazing people. They're, you know, everyone is kind and everyone is loving. And so I said to Zinju and I said to a guide, I go, gosh. And it was like, you didn't even do the shock. You didn't even do the releasing bow. And I'm like, what's a releasing bow? But I was instructed to become intimate with the people in the Sangha. And my loving teacher said, oh, so you think you're just doing a bow for you, Shalima? This is not really about you. You are a vessel. You are gifted. This is about, so we're talking about a practice trail here. You know, what's my practice trail? And at this point, I'm kind of like, I've summit. You know, I've like, okay, I got the rope. What am I supposed to do with the rope? How do I learn the forms? But when she said, you are a vessel, you are, you know, this is a gift. It is a gift when a priest bow. And like, you're not bowing for yourself. You want to bow for everybody in the Sangha. You want to bow for the babies, in Palestine, you want to bow for the unhoused people. So when you see, when I, you know, so now I'm like, oh my goodness. And then another guy said, just become intimate with everyone. And I was like, how did I do that? And so before I even stepped on the mat, I just kind of did a cursory look around the room. And it was an amazing experience because it wasn't a thought. The first two, I was like, what do I do next? I'm saying in my mind. This was that body-mind experience that we hear about all the time. And I'm not bragging, but I nailed it, except I forgot to take my... I forgot to remove. You're on. When you're doshi, you're on. I forgot to pick up my rakusu. And the room went quiet, and everybody was just looking. The tantu said, pick your ass. So, a lot of things happened at Tassajara. All good. And I'm so happy I had the opportunity to clear up my schedule and could say yes. I asked my friend Tara, Tara, why don't you come on and go? I didn't even ask the teacher. Just like, well, this is, you know, this is the training. It's like, I'm going to do it, and I did it. And she just laughed at me again and said, oh, okay. You're going from kindergarten to university degree with not, you know. So I kind of missed a few steps. And I thought I would share tonight. I want to talk about a bird from Ghana called the Sankofa bird. You may have heard about this bird. And it's a bird that looks back as its feet moves forward. And I did a little bit of search. So San is to return. Ko, K-I, is to go. And Fa, Sankofa, Fa is to reach, to seek and take. And I thought that was kind of a powerful way to share tonight, starting at this point with the ropes and just kind of go back and share what that path has been for me. It's been a profound path. It's been a crooked path. It's been not like that. And a lot of stuff happened along the way. But I have to talk about Tongaria before I start to talk about back then. Tongaria was 2 days of pure intensity. How many have done Tongaria? I know you've done Tongaria, so you know. So 30-day practice period, 2 days Tongaria, and right away, within an hour of sitting, two major images showed up for me. The monkey, the king. This was not a little chimpanzee. This monkey had on a robe. This was a huge monkey, and it was just looking at me. And I remember saying, oh, this is going to be interesting. Because we talk about the monkey mind, but I always thought the monkey was a little guy. The monkey is a king monkey. And then behind the monkey, my mother, who transitioned a long time ago, she looked like she had some shears or a machete or something, which gave me, I'm like, okay, so she's going to take care of the monkey one way or another. And so, you know, there's some rabbits, some squirrels. There were faces that I took as my ancestors. But it's been a long road. I was born in 1951 in Georgia, in the South. It's a great teaching ground. It was a time when if you were black in body, especially if you were male, you could be hung, which I'm going to come back around to what happened at Tassajara with a teacher. I'm just going to share how difficult it can be being black and bodied. And the reason why I asked Terry to go with me, I didn't want to go by myself. I did not want to go to Tassajara, even though I know Tassajara and I know the people. I might as well. Do I want to share that now? So to go deep, to honor my family and the people in the South, the church, the teachers, the elders, these foundations, the politics of the South, the Ku Klux Klan, going to the back of the bus. I got the opportunity. We went to the back of the bus because we weren't allowed to the front of the bus, drinking from a colored water fountain. I'm not really that old, but I remember this experience. And I didn't know at the time that it was inappropriate. I did not know at the time, because when you're a kid, not everything is good. You know, it's like a game. So people go to the back of the bus and you go to the back of the bus. And it took me leaving the South, going further south, going to Miami, going into the junior college. And at that time, in the early 70s, the junior colleges were bringing in a lot of black teachers. They brought in enough. So my first experience in the junior college was an English teacher who gave a class assignment to read the autobiography of Malcolm X. And that's a warrior's move right there. I mean, we're talking Florida, we're talking Miami. And that's when the practice trail, the conscious practice trail, which actually I kind of believe it started there when I read that book. It's a great book. And like light bulbs, it's like, you know, I started to become enlivened. I'm like, wow. You know, I didn't realize that all of this was happening, and I was part of it. I was actually part of that. And so there is Gil Scott-Heron, at the age of 18. He was 18 when he wrote The Revolution Would Not Be Televised. He was 18 years old. And we were told that we couldn't listen to Gil Scott-Heron because he would drop a few F-bombs and a few MF-bombs. But he wrote at 18, The Revolution Would Not Be Televised. And I think I became more of a radical at that point. And I had spent all of this time in church. My mom was Methodist. My dad was Baptist. And I just wanted to be a good girl. I just wanted to do right, and that's the way they raised us, to do right. And so I could not understand how these beautiful black people could have a smile on their face. They did not teach me to be radical, or me or my family or my brothers. It just wasn't taught to hate white people. They just, I didn't know how they did it. But this is how they raised us. They raised us to be functional people. And their goal was that we finish high school. So my mom had a third grade education, my dad had a third grade education, and they set the bar, finish high school. And that was like, okay, you know. So to finish, to go to school, we went to an all-black school. We had these great teachers who would command the room. They would walk in and, you know, listen. Upon graduation, I had three pieces of documentation. I had that diploma. I had my driver's license, because they used to teach driver's ed in high school. And I had my voter's registration card, because the church, in addition to worshiping, was a place of a political place where people went to see, you know, who do we vote for? How do we get from underneath this Jim Crow, the KKK? It's like, so I grew up being scared, and I didn't even know I was afraid, but it's there. It is there. And so then it was, so the practice trail, when I look back, when I use the Sankofa bird as an image to kind of look back on that, I now see that the practice starts, if you're a black embodied, and I think it happens for all of us, it starts before you're born. Our lives are mapped out to not be leaders, to not be priests, to work, to continue the enslavement. And so my issues that I had was trying to become white. And it wasn't spoken. It was how it was taught, the pressing of the hair, the straightening, getting the kinks out of the hair. A little girl, I'm three, you know, and it's like I think it started there. And so it's a sad tale, but it's a good tale. It's a tall tale. It's a tale worthy of speaking about, because that's the path. That was what happened. So I don't go around bemoaning the fact that I grew up in the South, or bemoaning the fact that the first time I stepped into a Zendo, I didn't see any black folks. It was like, where are the black people? I better do something about that. When I decided to go to chiropractic school, there weren't any black chiropractors. How many black chiropractors do you know? In 1993, across the United States, there were less than 0.5% of licensed African-American chiropractors. Then they stopped the count. We don't count it that way anymore. But so to be in the world, to be gifted, it's a gift, a straight up gift. I feel like I've been gifted to have this experience, to be able to go like, I think I can do something with, I really wanted to be a priest, and then I didn't want to be a priest. When I filled out the application, I said, oh yeah, I used to want to be a priest, but I don't want to be a priest. Like my teacher said, I'm going to track you as a priest. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Let me see. I just knocked this over. Let's see here. I can put it up high. Hello. Can you hear me? Closer. Closer? Ooh, I heard that. Closer. There we go. So I have had so many opportunities. Most of my family are Christian. In fact, 99.9% of them are. And so for me to say, I want to take a different path and I didn't make it happen. I really didn't have anything to do with it. It's all about ancestors. When I first got to Tassajara, someone said, why do you want a priest? I said, I had anything to do with that. It's the ancestors' call. And I hear the ancestor. And I hear them through, they speak to me loudly. So I'm going to tell you a story that happened in the dining room. There was this Dharma teacher giving some instructions about how to entice someone to come closer, or, you know, if they're too close, how to push them up, not how to just give them a little signal to move back. And if someone is in your space, it's going to make sense in just a second. If someone is in your space and you're feeling a certain way, there are things you can do, like maybe hold your elbow or hold your knee. She was doing a really good job. And then she did this thing that I've had to deal with a lot. She pulls out a rope. She pulls out a big, fat, white rope. And I said to myself, oh, no, not the rope. I didn't want to deal with it. I did not want to deal with it. So the next day, she was in the Zendo, and she continued to have a little chat with us. And I wasn't going to bring it up. But I raised my hand to ask her another question. This is how the ancestors work with me. And out came this comment. You know, when you pulled that rope out yesterday, my gut started to contract. And it did. And she looked. And in the middle, she got it. She understood the historical pain of what a rope does. The black, you're just tearing it. She understood it. That's, I believe, that's how the Dharma works. I was like, no, I'm just not going to do it. And then I opened my mouth, and there it was. This is what I feel like my path will continue to be, is to tell the truth about what hurts and, you know, the path of where we are in this country, which politically today is the same as it was in 1951. We have not changed one bit, I feel. We are, you know, we don't vote hardly. The boys are still out there running with the three-piece suit. They're not called the KKK. They're called, you know what they're called. And we're in trouble. And there's no time to be afraid. There's no time to say, in my opinion, that we can't have a conversation. This is an intimate space. And I'm not on any other platform. So if someone say, oh, you know, she told the story about the teacher. If anybody reads that, they're going to know who I'm talking about. I'm not trying to bring... In fact, she did me a favor. She helped me by bringing that rope out because it gave me some grit. It gave me the gumption. Even though I was trying to, like, I don't want to deal with that, it came out. And it's like all the air in the room, all the oxygen was sucked out. And then people came to me later and go like, well, you know, I had that same feeling. I'm like, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you leave me out in the ocean to drown? So anyway, so that happened. So these things are happening. We are in a state of crazy, crazy state here. So I've always, as far as I can remember, and I remember back, I've seen myself at 18 months. And the way I saw that was I had a vision. And this vision was this black woman, and some of you may have know the story. She came up out of the river with a snake in her hand, head of the snake and the tail of the snake. And I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, my God, she's searching for me. And she takes off. And she lands me in the garden with my mother. And I'm like, gee, I must be like 18 months old. My mother was planting collard greens. So I've been kind of prone to this gift of seeing. And it's it comes in waves. It's not something that I have every day. But that was an acute one. And I bought... There was a poem that was read by the Susho at Tassajara that I thought I would read. Would you guys like to hear me read this poem? And the name of this poem is called Fear. And it's by Kahil Gibran. It is said that before entering the sea, a river trembles with fear. She looks back at the path she has traveled from the peaks of the mountains, the long winding road crossing forests and villages, and in front of her, She sees an ocean so vast that to enter there seems nothing more than to disappear forever. But there is no other way. The river cannot go back. Nobody can go back. To go back is impossible in existence. The river needs to take the risk of entering the ocean, because only then will fear disappear. Because that's where the river will know it's not about disappearing into the ocean, but of becoming the ocean. And I just love this, and it kind of spoke to me when I was like shaking and all that stuff, being afraid to make an offering, falling on my face. And then I wrote a little poem. Somebody can keep me tracking on the time. She whispers, embrace the awakening of life. As I breathe in and out, a sense of spaciousness is created within my cells, my muscles, and joints. The amber sparks serves as a poignant reminder of my deep connection to the timeless sands of the earth. With her gentle encouragement, as I fully savor each inhale, like, are we breathing in here? This is the question. Are we breathing or are we just sitting? As I fully savor each inhale, I am reminded to fill my belly with breath and then release it out, out, out. This practice invites a profound sense of awareness and vitality into my being. So I have been blessed to study massage. I've been blessed to be a chiropractor. I've been blessed to hold the stories of my ancestors and my family. And I sit here today, you know, and I'm only here because of this gift that has been given to me. And this is how I express it. I'm so honored to be here. I'm so honored to have your ear. I'm so honored to say, I don't know. I'm just honored to fall on my face multiple times. I keep falling on my face. I keep like not knowing. I practice not knowing. I remember in practice when I'm actually a retired chiropractor, but what patients said, well, what's wrong with me? And I remember saying, I have no idea. That's the practice. That's the trail. That's a practice trail. I have a son who's special needs. Practice started there with him. He has taught me so much, how to not only be with him, but how to be with myself, how to advocate. He almost died last year. I spent a lot of time in Georgia. And he has he has a kind of like a photogenic memory, actually. He remembers everybody. He speaks to everyone. And when he became septic, he had an operation and he became septic. And for a person who doesn't speak, he says to me, Ma, I am so sick. Sounds pretty clear to me. And he went someplace. I don't know where he went. But when he came back, he would not let the doctors touch him. He would not let them take blood. And I had to advocate for him and say, you know, I wrote him a letter. I wrote these doctors a letter, and I said, my son is saying no, and I agree. And I knew that they were going to release him. And so practice started there. When I birthed him, I was 16 when I birthed him. And I made sure I wasn't having any more kids.
Well, Well, Salima, I don't want to interrupt you, and yet I'm thinking people will want to respond to all that you shared. I mean, it's so deep and honest and real, and we'd like to have time just to
Q&A.
Talk with you.
We're going to do a Q&A.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you.
I don't know if it's helpful to know this. I'm just really curious about why she brought out the rope and what that was about.
Well, I think, it was an unconscious act. And Terry, you said that it was to do what with the rope? Because when she brought the rope out, my brain's went blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. What? It was a somatic thing where you put the rope on the ground and put it around you and see how close she could get to you and how you felt as it got closer and closer or further and further out. And so it was, for Selena and I, it was like, yeah, okay. But the other people just didn't get that. All they got was, oh, okay, it's a rope, you're putting it on the floor, you're putting it around you, and, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's so helpful to hear your perspective on that, because, I mean, I'm married to a woman of color, but she's not black, and she doesn't have that experience. I wouldn't have guessed that that would trigger. And it makes so much sense that it would. So thanks for so much we missed being white, you know.
It's embedded. It's deep. I don't go around thinking about it, you know. But I feel that part of the practice is to all of those places that we bestowed stuff. All of those places that we sutured, you know, I'm a little kid, and I saw my parents being afraid, you know, and I entranced. What does a little kid do? We're into playing, right? So I stuck it someplace. So when the rope was brought out, you know, it just brought it up. And it when it came up, and I tried to, like, pretend... Like, I got it, I saw it, I just didn't want to deal with it. But what was profound about that experience, she got it. We all got it. And so to get it or to feel it, to know your audience, and I'm sure I've said things to people that wasn't, you know, not an intention to hurt anybody. I don't believe that she was trying to hurt me or Terry. It was just an unconscious act. And another unconscious act, and this happened at San Francisco Zen Center, was to look people in the eye. This is part of the training, was you go around and you look, and it's like, it's just two black people up in here and everybody else is white. Do you know how many black people died for looking white people in the eye? So I carry that. You know, I don't talk about it. I don't, like, I'm not clinical about it. But it's there. It was there. And so if you continue this practice, I believe if you continue your breathing, your inhales and your exhales, you one day will be sitting right here. And you will offer, I'm not there yet, ways for people to do certain things, you know. Like, how do we breathe? How do we inhale and exhale? And so to know that these things can be problematic, it's great. That's how we learn. I think, I feel. That's it. That's the key. And so we have to saddle up. We saddle up. We go for the ride. Tell the truth, which is my first vow. 2019, my teacher said, pick one vow. I said, I vow to tell the truth. And these vows are powerful. They're very powerful.
Yeah, thanks, Shalima, so much. you know, I was just talking to somebody today, just having lunch with someone, and I don't know why this came up, but I think we were talking about somebody in another sangha, and we were talking about actually how white our sangha was, you know, and we were both saying, yeah, our sangha's pretty white. And this person said, well, you know, look around, the Vietnamese people have their temple, and you know, somebody else has their temple, and you know, black church is black church. You don't see very many white people, and so forth. And you know, I could I say, yeah, that seems to be true. And tonight, what I'm feeling though is like, You're an ambassador to to this sangha, and bringing that perspective from the world that you knew and grew up in, which was a really different world, and it's it was really interesting to hear, though you were a kid. And kids, of course, don't fully, get the situation.
Yeah.
It's just like.
Yeah.
And but anyway, I feel like thank you for, being here as an ambassador. That's what I'm feeling. It's like, thank you for sharing your world with us, and sensitizing us to that world, I think.
As we bring in, as your audience, I mean, can you imagine this room full of just African Americans? It'd be great. So we have to have these skills. I don't know why I'm chosen to do this stuff. There's no need to know, really. But I feel like it's a gift. It's a gift to just voice it. Because, I don't know. It's like, Terry, come on and go. I don't want to be the only one. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your talk tonight. And it's funny that you just said that. Can you imagine being in a room of only African Americans? And the answer is yes. That was my first AA meeting. And that was kind of my start of where I am today. And I was just like what you're describing. This was Alhambra, Oakland. And I was like, oh, my God. But then I started to, and I was in law school, and these guys are off the street or whatever. And, the guy who was the secretary of that meeting, he became my first sponsor, and that was my first home group, because when you got to the message, I realized we were all one. And, I don't get that experience. I've witnessed this racial stuff. I can kind of understand what you're saying. I'll give you a story real quick, because I've had a lot of fear in my life, and I've always wondered, where does this come from? And I acknowledge that as a truth, and I kind of figured out, so my father, out of his family, 10 kids, and for whatever reason, my grandfather beat the crap out of my dad. And I always felt that this ancient trauma that preceded me, rubbed off on me in some way or in another. And it always manifests in weird ways. Yeah. And so, like when I'm performing guitar, you don't know I get stage fright. So I found myself at Tassajara once with my teacher, Zanki Mary Mosin, and she's up there giving the Dharma talk on a Saturday night, so I'm Jishu. And it requires me to, do the Han and communicate with the Han. And, and I'm learning all this stuff in one night. And Mary, just before this, she fell and had broken her wrist. And And it, it was something else. So I was just overwhelmed. But anyway, I remember getting up there when Mary was doing her bows, and I'm G-shooing it up with the stick of incense, and she's up there shaking with her hands, and I remember I'm just shaking with my incense, like, where is this coming from?
Yeah, really. Yeah, rattling of the bones.
Thank you so much. I guess the first thing I want to say is that just listening to your story, some of which I knew, but it's like at every juncture, something in you was listening to some kind of inner guide. And also you followed it. So, I mean, that's amazing, really.
Yeah, I think
because
so.
Because you wouldn't be here you are if you hadn't followed it.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then I also wanted to share that just recently I had this dream about my grandmother, which brought me in connection with my great-grandmother and my great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother. And for the first time, I felt they were my ancestors. And, you know, I've known about this. I've read, Zenju talks about it and about the power of ancestors, but this time I really felt, and it was the first time I felt like I really belonged somewhere. That was very powerful. And so just to hear you describe the ancestors are working through you all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, thank you.
All the time. Yeah, they're amazing. And I'm, you know, I'm the vessel. We are just vessels. I'm a vessel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed your talk, and I wanted to just say I really enjoyed the part where you spoke about looking around the Zendo and feeling, and the advice to be intimate with everyone around you. Because I feel like that both has such a deep meaning for your story overall and all the things you've talked about today, and for all of us. Because with some of the stories you spoke of, like, we won't know the pains we cause others and like the things they carry, the fears and hurts and traumas, and that everyone is carrying all around us their entire worlds of experiences and causes and conditions. But if we're intimate with the people around us and the audience, when those things happen, we can fully accept that and move forward together. And I really appreciate that, because I've had a lot of experiences with different people in different sanghas who've had different traumas and pains, and especially with Zen, where we have a very very certain way of doing things a lot of the time, and some of them date back to ancient times where they were for very particular kinds of people, like the constant slapping the ground and shouting. Like, that's really nice for a lot of people and really not good for a lot of people. And so many little things. I've known people who just couldn't deal with facing the wall and had to face inward. And this idea of being intimate with everyone around us, I just really appreciated that. It really spoke to me. So.
Thank you. I just love it. That was like the key for me how do we become intimate? You know? So I did at Tashahara, Way-Seeking Mind. It gave you like 20 minutes, do a Way-Seeking Mind talk. And about 10 minutes, I looked up and, oh my God. I just stopped. I'm like, you guys are just, I mean, it was like they were sucking lemons. I'm like, wow. And then you know, the recognition of we don't know sometimes how to do it. We don't know how to be intimate. You know, my practice is just pan around the room and make eye contact, and that works for me. But it might not work. You have to find your own way, I feel. And that, so I'm a newbie, but I feel like that's the practice, is to find, what are we doing? Is to find, you know, how do we connect? We talk about compassion, we chant about it, and, you know, we offer up, do this, and talk about our twisted this, that, and the other. And that sounds great, but how do we put it into practice? I feel it's going to be, you know, what's coming for me. And the rattling, you know, it was like, it was offered to me, well, that's just your mirror being stirred up. Like, oh. We don't know. I didn't know how much I was stitched. I keep hitting. I didn't know how much protection I thought I had around me. You don't know until you fall on your face, and that is, I didn't know until I fell on my face. And that's when, you know, it's like, it's a body-mind experience. We can talk about body-mind experience, and I watched Dora Lee. She's doshi. She did a great job, but it looks good. It looks good, but how, and I've watched Jim. I'm starting to see how people approach, you know, the mat. And when they now I know to offer incense is, I'm hoping, hopefully, you guys are offering incense to everybody. That was my key, you know. We do it all the time. It's done all the time for us to see it and then to participate in it. You know, I don't know. Yeah, it's great. Thank you. Thank you.